if you consider the character of Seymour Skinner being ruined because of this one episode made a weird thing happen. Like,
yeah.
So in your minds, Homer Simpson has literally, is the guy that went to space, is the guy that had a feud with the president.
Yeah.
Like, what? He hasn't actually done all those things as part of his character.
Right. Did Milhouse really jump out of that waterfall?
Yeah, right. He was like being chased by the FBI.
That really ruined Milhouse's
it was like
character.
Bart put
for
him
me.
On the FBI's most wanted list, which is why in all subsequent episodes, Milhouse is always like looking over his shoulder.
Yeah.
Like, oh man, he's always searching for the one-armed man.
Yeah, exactly.
Seen a script, but I've no doubt if it isn't up to par, they'll chuck it out. Ooh la 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 la. All my actor friends are cracking wise, but I can see the envy in their eye. Ooh la 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 la. Now I'm suffocating in the makeup chair underneath the cord of glue and a bag of hair. I'm a looking like an overgrown shit suit. Somehow I always knew.
Welcome to Fan Fiction Writers Room. I'm your editing manager, Spencer Suarez.
And I'm your managing editor, Liz Cernick.
Here on Fan Fiction Writers Room, we take characters submitted by you, the listener, and weave them into a masterpiece in the way all great stories were meant to be told by amateurs on the internet.
If you'd like to suggest characters for us, submit your characters to ffwrshow@gmail.com.
Are you doing good, Liz?
I'm doing great.
Great.
Gotta tell ya.
Great.
My life is great.
Life is great.
The end.
Great.
Yep.
Well, thank you for listening to...
I was late for work every day this week.
Okay, great.
I watched Ready Player One in theaters twice.
Yes.
I had planned to watch Ready Player One 0 times in theaters, and somehow...
Somehow you saw it twice.
It just happened. It was just part of my destiny, I
yeah.
guess. I got some groceries. I need to buy some pills. And I watched Deep Space Nine and learned that my sister is watching Star Trek Discovery.
Why?
And that's my week in a nutshell.
Why did you see it the first time?
That's right.
The second time I invited you to see Ready Player One.
Mm-hmm.
But why did you see it the first time? Because you saw it alone, correct?
Yes. It was a good time. Did I talk about this on a previous podcast?
No, you tweeted about it.
Oh, okay. So it was when there was some real bummer news on the old internet about John Kay having indiscretions, as all of our heroes will eventually be known to have done.
I was actually talking to someone we both know on the bus today. I bumped into him, and he was working on the Louis C.K. animated show, and God. Yeah. Can because
it... I think I had been talking to someone about possibly working because I responded and I was like, oh yeah, I could do some work for you, and then they just never responded again.
Right.
So
yeah.
I was like, oh, it's probably that one that was just canceled.
Yes.
Yeah, so it was a weird out of body experience for me all day because Twitter was going apeshit and I was just at work all day, and I know that like I have zero knowledge of John Kay's work.
I feel like neither of us are huge fans of him.
Yeah, honestly, like, I never liked Ren and Stimpy, and I was really surprised, honestly, to find out that anyone did.
Right.
Because it was just a gross cartoon that I hated, and I was mad that it was, like, getting in the way of the cartoons I wanted to watch on TV. So when I learned later on, and I actually met other, like, artists and other cartoon people as an adult, and I was like, oh, you guys all like this? It was, But, so I knew that, like, John Kay was, like, a straight-up hero to a lot of cartoonists, so I was like, ooh, this sucks a lot, oh boy. And being on Twitter all day at work just had me feeling real drained, had a real out-of-body experience, and so I was on the train going home, and I was like, I need to get this garbage out of my brain.
Yes.
Because I was spiraling! My brain was just spiraling!
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I should just go to a movie by myself.
That is also what I do when I spiral.
Yeah, I used to do that all the time, and I just hadn't recently, and I was like, oh, shit, yeah. And I also love getting theater nachos. And my movie watching buddy, Michael,
yes,
hates theater nachos.
Oh no.
And he talks me out of it every time. Because every time I buy them halfway through, I'm like, oh fuck, this was a bad idea. These are so gross.
Yeah.
And sure enough, halfway through eating them, I was like, this is also very gross. But my thinking was that I need to put some garbage in my eyeballs, garbage in my ears, and garbage in my mouth.
Yes.
To clog it all up, stop the bad thoughts. And so Ready Player One was about as garbage a movie as I could think of.
It was the ultimate garbage experience.
Yes. Big, loud spectacle that I don't want to think about or, like, have deep thoughts about or anything.
I mentioned I had seen it, and Rachel, who we talked about it on the podcast before, her brother had seen it, and his opinion was, if you don't think about the characters or the plot, it's great. And I was like, who went into that movie thinking about the characters or the plot?
Well, I mean, if I wasn't specifically gearing myself for a garbage experience, I would have been going in so mad the whole time about exactly that. And even as I was watching it, I think just because the internet had geared me up to enjoy hating it was part of why I enjoyed watching it at all,
too. Oh, for sure.
Because, like, it's so...
Yeah.
Regardless of, like, the dumbness of all the references and stuff, like, the plot just... There's so many problems. There's so many problems.
But it's fine. Like, whatever.
Yeah, it's fine garbage for... It's loud spectacle.
Exactly. I enjoyed it far more than I, say, would enjoy a Transformers movie for the same reason.
Yeah, actually.
Like, it is loud garbage that I can follow, that I am not, like, frustrated. It's like, what is happening?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the characters are...
Because it is Spielberg, so, like, it's a good, competent movie in all ways, top to bottom.
But... And the most problems with it is it's a little schmaltzy. Mm-hmm. It's a little, like, the characters aren't that interesting, but they're not insulting like a Bay movie is.
Yeah. And then I saw it without meaning to, and then several days later, you, my best and worst friend,
that's me,
invited me to go to Ready Player One with our other friend after recording our podcast last week. And I was like, I guess so. I guess I have to see this movie again.
Yeah.
It's just in the cards. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like,
Our friend that has zero knowledge of pop culture, we went to go see Ready Player One with. So that was a really weird, trippy experience for this person to, like, be watching this movie almost, like, with intellectual curiosity. Like she said, when she read the book, she had the internet open on the side at all times to look up what these references are.
Right.
She's the kind of person where you have to explain to her who Ben Stiller is.
Exactly. It's like... I feel like watching it, like, that would be watching the original Star Wars movie, and when they say, like, spice mines of Kessel, you're like, ooh, what is this, like, it's this fantastical thing that exists and is ethereal, and we don't actually know what it is.
But it turns out there's a ton of Wikipedias, and you can just look it up, and there's a bunch of information about, the spice mines of Kessel were a TV show from the 70s that you could blah, blah, blah,
exactly,
blah, you know?
Yeah.
So that was her experience watching it.
Set dressing... that is supposed to elicit a certain, like, oh yes, I have seen that. I know what The Shining is.
It was a nice reminder that my experience is not the universal experience, as we all tend to forget sometimes.
It is interesting hanging out with our friend Reagan, who is the least cynical person
I've
ever met. And then the two of us being like, everything sucks, I hate movies, I hate... And she's just like, oh man, it was such a joy to work on this and see this. And it's like, oh yeah, like, you don't have to be a jerk.
Like I was just saying before we, like, officially started, so often we'll be hanging out in a group, and I will say something to you 100% sarcastically.
Yeah.
And then Reagan will be like, oh, you're interested in that? Well, let me tell you about all the stuff I know about that. And I'm like, oh, I'm a jerk.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was making fun of this thing that you are interested in.
Yeah.
When I was in school and she was taking, doing extra schooling, so she was in art class sometimes, I was making a short about dinosaurs because they're funny looking and... T-Rex has funny little arms, and it was like, bah, bah, bah. And because I love dinosaur comics, the
the webcomic.
The webcomic. I was going to make a short where it's just straight up no dialogue. It's just running, where a T-Rex is running, and then no, a little Dromaeosaurus is running, the little yellow dinosaur. They're egg snatchers.
Yes.
It's an Ornithomimus,
yeah.
You know, a bird mimic.
The egg snatchers.
I guess I know more with these dinosaurs than I thought.
Yeah, the egg snatchers I know from Land Before Time.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Those guys. So
are you referring to a sharp tooth?
So egg snatcher running that looks exactly like the little egg snatcher in dinosaur comics. Then it zooms out and it turns out there's a T-Rex behind her. And then it's like, oh no, and so she runs even faster. And that's the end of the short.
Yeah.
And then Regan saw me working on this. And sure enough, weeks later, invites me to go to a museum with her and her friend.
Wow, yeah.
To see
some dinosaur
fossils. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Like, I was just so tickled by being invited out anywhere by anyone.
Exactly.
So I was like, great. And so I was out. And then later I was like, why did you invite me to this? And she's like, oh, aren't you like really interested in dinosaurs? I mean, isn't everyone?
Yeah.
I don't care about science, though. I had a great time, though.
Sure.
I think I still have a little fossil that we all got to take home.
The thing is that, like, we grew up, clearly Spielberg is really interested in dinosaurs, because we grew up at a time where there was Jurassic Park,
mm-hmm.
We're Back.
Right. Well, didn't he have something to do with
Land Before Time? Yes.
Well?
He produced it, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I believe so. And, like, there was just, like, bunch of dinosaur properties coming out around the 90s, mid to early 90s, and like, it was easy to be into dinosaurs.
Exactly, yeah. A casual dinosaur fan.
Exactly.
Very easy to do.
So would you like to write some fan fiction with me?
I sure as heck would.
So our first character this week is Shenron from Dragon Ball, who's kind of like He's a dragon.
Yeah.
Magical dragon, grants wishes.
So you collect the 7 Dragon Balls,
mm-hmm.
and then Shenron the magical dragon appears and grants you one wish.
What, can we make a fan fiction just with Shenron? Do we need to bring someone else in? I feel like
Shenron's like a MacGuffin.
Yeah.
More than a character.
So I guess, like, how about Nigel Thornberry? So Nigel Thornberry, as we all know from the meme.
Yeah, I was gonna say, mostly I know the meme.
He's more of a meme than a man at this point. He was voiced
he's
by
more
Tim.
More meme than man.
Voiced by Tim Curry.
Oh, was he?
Yes.
Holy shit. Wow.
Yeah. I think of him as like sort of a stereotype of a British person.
Yeah, yeah. The old school British explorer from the like 1890s adventure novels.
Mm-hmm. But like a parody
Dr.
of
Livingston,
that.
I presume.
Yes. You know, he says smashing.
Oh yeah, right.
And
I did actually watch the show when it was on TV.
I quite liked it, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he's kind of a clueless idiot dad type.
Yeah.
He's
the scientist in the family?
Yeah.
Or the documentarian?
Yeah, the reason...
He's the reason they travel, I thought.
The reason they travel is he's the host of this documentary program that, what's-her-face's mom is, like, the camera woman. Nigel is
the host,
and then the rest of them are along for the ride. Mm-hmm.
So, The Wild Thornberries was a Nickelodeon show in the early 2000s?
Yes.
I want to say? About a family, an American family, their dad is British, so I guess they're British-American, who travel around the world, and Eliza Thornberry, the, like, 10-year-old daughter?
Yes.
Or so? 13-year-old, maybe?
I feel like she's
preteen.
Not...
Preteen.
Maybe,
like, 11.
A teen. I think because she has the older sister who has hit the teen and is, like, a jerk, cynical...
The quintessential teen.
Yeah. Listens to Nirvana and, like... has no interest in animals.
So, but the premise of the show is that Eliza Thornberry has been cursed?
I guess it's a curse?
I don't know if they even see in the episodes when...
Yeah, I only knew it from the animals. Theme song. I don't think I ever saw the very first episode.
She can talk to animals, and she doesn't let anyone else in her family know that she can talk to animals. Yeah. So they're making nature documentaries, and she's actually talking to the animals in the documentaries on the side.
Do they do gags where, like...
And they have a pet monkey. So the monkey is a pet to everyone else, but it's a friend to Eliza, because you can talk to him.
Yeah. Did they do gags where, like, Nigel...
Oh, and they had a little magic... They had a little Tarzan kid.
Yeah.
I forgot about that guy.
Yeah.
What was his name?
I don't know. He made noises. Exactly.
They found a wild child and adopted him.
Yes.
Raised by monkeys or something.
Did they do gags where Nigel would be like, oh, this cat is this, and then she would talk to it and be like... No.
I don't remember specific examples.
I feel like that would make a lot of sense within the premise of the TV show.
Mm-hmm.
That Nigel would be kind of more, like, fancy himself an expert, but wouldn't actually be an expert. Okay, we have these two characters right now.
Mm-hmm. So, naturally, Nigel Thornberry is traveling around the world to find the seven Dragon Balls.
I mean, naturally, that would make the most sense.
Yeah.
What would Nigel wish for if he found them? Bulma wants a boyfriend. Mm-hmm. Eventually, what else? What other wishes happen in Dragon Ball? There's, like, they wish for Goku to become alive again because he died. A lot of, like, wishing people...
Dragon Ball Z wishes might have exclusively been to bring people back from the dead.
Yeah.
Nice thing about Shenron... No stipulations. No rules. Well, no rules, just right. Could you have wished someone to fall in love with you? I mean, probably. Since she wanted a boyfriend, presumably, yeah. Yes.
Like, the whole genie stipulations feel so, like, plot-driven.
Yeah. Covering up those plot holes.
Yeah, exactly. Not really any sort of, like, ethical thing. It's more just like, we don't want him to just be like, I want Jasmine to be in love with me. Okay, great.
The end.
Yeah. Happy ending.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or like if he'd gone through the entire adventure of the movie and then he gets the genie back and it's just like, I wish none of that had happened.
Yeah,
none of that bad stuff.
Yeah. It's very plot driven. Yeah.
So Oolong does wish for a pair of women's underwear.
Right.
So he can wear them on his head.
Yes.
But that was also spur of the moment to prevent the evil guy from...
Yes.
But I feel like Oolong probably had that in the back chamber the whole time.
Yeah.
If I get a chance, that's what I'm going for. Probably they were used underwear.
I would have
imagined. But maybe the
so.
Sensors on Dragon Ball said just use underwear.
Just regular underwear.
Pilaf, the little evil guy, he wanted just world domination, I think.
Right. So, Nigel, I'm going to be like...
I remember being tickled every time I come across food that is... also an anime character's name that I never knew was food. Like, the first time I heard about Rice Pilaf, I was like, oh, that's why his name's Pilaf!
Right, yeah.
I also read a lot of Sorcerer Hunters as a kid, and they're all named after food as well, and I didn't know any of it, so every time I come across French cuisine and I see sachet torte, I'm like, oh, fuck! That guy! And then I see, like, chocolate mousse, and I'm like, oh, right! That's why her name is Chocolat. Or tiramisu, and I'm like, Tira!
You're just...
Carrot glaze. Oh, it's carrot cake icing. Okay. Almond glaze. Almond icing. Gâteau. That's cake in French. Éclair. That's another French dessert. I'm done. Those are all Sorcerer Hunter characters.
What is the Dragon Ball guy's name?
Pilaf?
Akira.
Oh, Toriyama?
Toriyama is still...
Toriyama-san.
Toriyama-san is still tickling your funny bone all these years later.
Yeah. Retroactively.
Mm-hmm. So, this is what I'm going to suggest. Nigel and one of our other characters, or maybe more than one of our other characters, are against each other, racing to get all of the Dragon Balls. And it's a race. It's Nigel.
Is it a game show?
We could do a game show.
And his wife is maybe the camera person for the game show?
Sure.
Oh, he's the host of the game show! He doesn't want the Dragon Balls.
Okay.
What does Nigel Thornberry want with a magical wish?
I suppose Nigel is very happy.
He's so content.
He's very
everything
content.
He's ever won.
He's got a lovely family. He's got a monkey. He's got a TV show. Yeah. All right. So, let's do Akira Fudo from Devilman Crybaby. It was specifically Devilman Crybaby.
Is he the Devilman Crybaby?
Yes, he is Devilman. The main character from Devilman Crybaby, who he is, starts off as this very, like, sensitive, sad boy and gets possessed, I guess, by a demon and becomes, like, this overconfident, strong, like,
Devil man.
But at his core is still kind of that sensitive, crybaby, sad boy.
Mm-hmm.
We have the Count from Sesame Street.
Okay.
So, and then we have Sandy and Andy from a Dolly Parton song.
No, not Sandy and Andy.
If you've never heard the song, oh man, I didn't actually write down what the song is called. It's called Me and Little Andy, I think.
Yes, yeah, for Me and Little Andy.
It's a Dolly Parton song that's...
Oh boy, if you haven't heard this song, you gotta listen to it right now. And I assume it will be edited into the episode
yes.
in some way, but...
When I ask her to come in, this is what she said. Ain't you got no gingerbread? Ain't you got no candy? Ain't you got an extra bed? Me and little Andy. Had a cake, a baker's man. My mommy ran away again. And we was all alone and didn't know what else to do. I wonder if you'll let us stay.
So Dolly Parton is singing it, and then in the song she, I assume it's still her singing,
mm-hmm.
but she puts on a little kid voice.
Yes.
It's me, Sandy. And I'm so toy. And she's like an orphan on the street? I wasn't really paying attention to the lyrics. I was just laughing when I was listening
Basically,
to it.
Basically, it's hilarious.
And her dog is little Andy?
Yeah. It's a little girl and her dog.
Hmm.
And she like knocks on Dolly Parton's door. And her mom ran away and her dad's like an alcoholic.
Hmm. Okay. So, my mommy ran away and my daddy's an alcoholic.
Yeah.
And we so scared.
And she wants gingerbread and candy.
Oh, yeah.
And then at the end of the song, she dies.
Mm-hmm. She just kind of falls over.
Yeah.
her eyes go into X's, tongue falls out of her mouth.
Yeah, exactly. It's hilarious anime. Yeah. Ooh, you know what? This is what happens, okay?
Okay.
Andy is hunting for the Dragon Balls to wish Sandy back to life.
Yes! That's right. Right. Oh, wait. Did they both die or just Andy? Or just Sandy?
I believe they both die.
Probably.
But I think we, for the purposes of our fan fiction.
Okay.
I like that. Mm-hmm. And of course, the Count is the vampire from Sesame Street.
Yes.
Who loves to count.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps he's addicted to counting.
You could say. Yes.
Yeah. And his purpose is to educate children on math.
Oh, now I get
it. Yeah. In case you were missing the subtleties of The Count. Yes. So, okay.
Like Count Dracula.
Yes.
And he counts numbers.
Yes.
Now I get it.
So, okay, we have Nigel talking into a microphone. He says, welcome to Smashing.
Cheese pizza.
Is that it?
That's what the McElroys say.
Oh.
Because Tim Curry was in Home Alone 2.
Ah, yes.
And he said something about, and one cheese pizza. I can't do it. They
no.
are just too much practice.
Yeah, they have been crafting their Tim Curry impressions.
I was going to say, in Futurama.
Okay.
I can't remember what is happening, but someone says some really obvious pun or joke. And you hear Fry in the background go, I get it. And then, like, a couple seconds later, it gets explained in more detail.
Oh,
yes. And then you hear him say, oh, now I get it.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's, like, my favorite joke to make. And I've noticed this about myself, especially, like, re-listening to... Because who has recordings of themselves
right, exactly.
they can re-listen to? So start a podcast if you want to learn all of your weirdest, worst quirks
oh, yeah,
of
it's
conversation.
The worst.
I make that joke all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, now I get it.
Yeah. Nigel introduces our three contestants. Akira, the Count, and Andy. And puts them on this quest.
Now, is it more an open quest... for anyone in the world?
Mm.
Is it like a Like a...
Well, we're setting it up to be like The Amazing Race, I suppose, which I've never actually seen.
Yeah, me neither.
But, you know, it's like all these people and they travel the world hunting for...
And they race?
They race.
Amazingly.
Yes.
Do they have actual, like, puzzles to solve? Do they set it up as like a...
Yes.
Linear progression kind of thing?
I mean...
Since we both never watched it, let's just think real hard and maybe the answer will come.
I have to assume that there is,
little
puzzles
works.
That they have to solve, because that would make it easier to have a TV show.
Mm-hmm. And also because all TV is scripted all the time.
Yes.
Reality TV is stupid garbage. It's make-believe.
Hey!
Shh. Just get in character.
Oh, okay.
I'm just being on brand
you're
myself.
Right. So...
Cynical Liz.
Yes, I think that it is what... they have set up is they are following these three contestants to as a reality show. Like, we're just like following these three people that are hunting for the Dragon Balls, but perhaps anyone could get the Dragon Balls.
Yes.
So every Akira, the Count, and Andy are all given a scouter.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what that was? Scouter was the visor, right? Or was the Dragon Ball scouter a scouter? It's a scouter. We'll call it a scouter.
Radar. Dragon Ball Radar.
Dragon Ball Radar, sorry.
The
bonus
thing. It might have been called the scouter.
I think a scouter was the power level identifier.
The
Dragon Ball Radar.
Yeah.
They're all given a radar.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. And they all have little...
Oh, you want them all to have the scouters.
Yeah, both. So the radar and the scouter are Bluetooth linked.
Of course.
So the things are... Because they're wearing it. It's so cute.
It is cute, yeah.
Think about the Count.
The Count wearing
it. And Vegeta, a little Vegeta outfit. Oh, it's adorable.
And a little puppy wearing it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to bring my...
I'm picturing a Shiba Inu.
Yes.
I don't think it is.
Probably not.
That's what I'm picturing. Oh, it's, you know what it is? It's probably like a Benji-style dog. Have you ever seen the Benji movies?
No.
Where he's this scruffy little mutt, poodle cross thing?
I have not, but it sounds adorable.
Oh, Seymour from Futurama.
Okay, yes.
He looks like a Benji dog. That's
right.
What a Benji dog
Yes.
Looks.
The saddest episode of Futurama.
That's right.
Let's say the first Dragon Ball is... what would be fun? Let's put it at the Great Wall of China.
I kind of want the three of them to be on a team.
Okay.
Rather than against each other.
Okay.
Because it'll be easier for them to like play off each other if they're working together.
That is true. You know? Okay. So, yeah.
Three men teams. Naruto rules.
Naruto rules.
Three men teams.
Yes.
Because that's the only thing in all of fiction that has ever used three main characters as a team.
Yes. And if you've ever heard of Harry Potter, you're sick and forget it. Forget Harry Potter.
Forget everything you know about Harry Potter. Have you forgotten it?
Good.
Now we can begin.
Okay, so how do a tiny dog, a tiny homeless dog,
this is going to be tough.
A very friendly counting vampire.
Yes.
And a crybaby who can become a very strong crybaby.
I feel like Akira Fudo had a friend who tried to put a demon inside him.
Yes.
And managed to put a demon inside him, but as a side effect of that, he can now speak to animals.
Okay.
Eliza Thornberry style.
Yes, sure.
Because it was accidentally the demon of Eliza Thornberry. So he has Eliza living inside his soul.
Okay.
And
it does, like, speaking of Naruto, it does the thing where he like breathes in him, and then it's a cage and there's a giant Eliza Thornberry in the cage, and it's like, I can destroy you.
The metaphor is that this very powerful evil Eliza Thornberry.
Evil Eliza Thornberry.
The demon of Eliza Thornberry.
Yes.
Is inside Akira, and so he's always constantly fighting against her from overpowering him.
Yes.
So he can speak to animals now. And
okay.
He's so... It makes him so sad, the plight of all the poor animals, and he's always crying.
Yes. So Akira never cries for himself. He cries for others.
That's right.
Because he's so empathetic,
yes.
I guess?
Empathy.
Okay, so these three characters, where are they going? Like, how does a Dragon Ball plot go? isn't it, don't they just, like, someone has a Dragon Ball, and they go and, like, they solve a problem for that Dragon Ball, for the person that has a Dragon Ball? Like, the radar brings them to a place.
I guess they're following the radar,
yeah, they, right? The radar brings them to, like, a small town.
And then they just have a random episodic adventure.
Yeah, and then, like, the person's like, oh, you're looking for this? Here you go. And so it's like, yeah. So we could do that.
Oh, I have another retcon to do.
Okay.
Maybe Akira Fudo is just a single contestant with his dog,
Andy.
Little Andy.
Little
and because,
Andy.
Because he can talk, he has learned about little Andy's plight, that his best friend Sandy is dead. And so Akira's like, my noble friend, I will help you in your quest.
That makes sense for Akira.
I've heard of these Dragon Balls, and we will find them and bring Sandy back to life.
Yes.
And so they go to Transylvania.
Oh!
By following the radar.
I love it.
And they come across this mysterious castle.
Right.
That they have to spend the night in. Maybe that's part of the challenge.
Okay.
You know how wacky uncles are always saying, yes, spend a night in my haunted castle.
So,
Do they own the castles?
What's with
these wacky uncles?
This is what we're going to set up, okay? How many Dragon Balls are there?
Seven.
So they have six Dragon Balls.
Seven mystical Dragon Balls.
Right.
The opening, I think, says that.
They have six Dragon Balls. Hmm. The scouter has led them to...
searching for seven crystal balls from the sky. That's why I know it's seven. Okay.
The scouter has led them to this castle. Mm-hmm. And it seems like scary and haunted. And Nigel goes onto the microphone. And he says, they kind of care. And Andy spend the night in this mysterious castle. It's matching.
So they have to spend the night in the castle for the game show?
Well, they're going into the castle and are searching for the Dragon Ball.
Right. Because maybe, presumably, the Dragon Ball is
in the
castle.
Yes.
The radar is leading them there.
Exactly.
Okay.
So the door opens and Akira says, come on, little Andy. And little Andy, like, climbs up on Akira's shoulder.
Oh my god, adorable!
And goes on his big shoulder.
Yeah.
And the two of them, like, give each other
a little nod.
Wait,
is Akira in his devil man form?
Yes.
But instead of devil wings on his head, they're two straight black braided ponytails. Like Eliza Thornberry.
Yes, so. Yes, exactly. Because possessed by Eliza Thornberry.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. Oh, okay, so the doors creak open mysteriously, and there's nothing but shadow, and then you can hear in the distance echoing,
Yes. And Akira, gulp, oh boy. And enters in, and Nigel says, this is going to be...
Smashing!
And cut! We'll take a little break, we'll catch you in a minute.
Catch you on the flip side.
I'm a great hairy hope of like a lycanthrope, a fat hair in my soap, oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm having a great time on my trek adventure. Hey!
Oh, I was sure your words would leave me unconscious.
I dream of a galaxy where your eyes are the stars and the universe worships the night.
Careful. Putting me on a pedestal so high you may not be able to reach me.
Then I'll learn how to fly. You are the heart in my day and the soul in my mind.
Okay, I have finished The Next Generation.
Okay.
Which is great.
Great.
And now I'm started on Deep Space Nine.
Okay.
Which is known...
as the anti-Star Trek, right?
Well, it's known as the best Star Trek.
Oh, interesting.
Maybe the anti-Star Trek is what it used to be known, but now there's Discovery to compete with.
Right.
So, but for sure, Deep Space Nine is the most, unlike Star Trek that has been made up to this point.
It is,
critical of Star Trek's neoliberal and colonial context.
Yes. It criticizes the Federation much more than any other Trek has, because previously the Federation was just the generic good guy side. And now that the world is fleshed out a little more, there's actually like, oh, the Federation is just one part of this giant puzzle piece that is right. their fictional galaxy. So now Deep Space Nine has half Bajoran and half, like, when I say Bajoran, I mean they work for the Bajoran government.
Okay.
Not that they are Bajoran. So there's right. There's Major Kira, who is Bajoran.
So there's competing governments that are exploring?
Well, they're on a space station. Okay. That's also the difference, is they're not exploring because they're on a space station. Hmm. They're not on a spaceship. So they're stationary. They're actually the space station that's next to the only stable wormhole in the galaxy.
So does their monster of the week come from the wormhole then?
Often, but not always. It's kind of just like, because there's like a large ensemble cast, sometimes it's just like, what wacky thing happens this week, you know? Okay. Like,
so it's even more soap opera than,
I don't know if soap opera is the right word. It's very episodic.
Yes.
You know, it's almost sitcom-y, but
right.
without being the sitcom tone.
Yes.
I guess the wormhole, yeah, it's not like the monsters come from the Gamma Quadrant, but the setup comes because yeah. there's a wormhole right next to them.
I guess I shouldn't say Monster of the Week, but yes, like, the idea of, like, the problem
yeah.
will come from the wormhole if there needs to be a problem. If we can get something out of the characters, then
mm-hmm.
we won't use the wormhole, but we have it
and the,
as a crutch.
Yes, and the fact that major competing, I don't know if companies, like, is the right word, but like governments own this space station. It's the Bajoran space station that is a provisional government because they, oh my god, it's so interesting. I could just give this entire, like, it's gonna get boring
yeah.
though if I give the entire history, but it's really interesting and really like believable. So the Cardassians had occupied Bajor forever and ever, and all the Bajorans were in, like, concentration camps, and now finally the Federation and the rest of the galaxy has kind of forced the Cardassians to stop being so shitty and just get off Bajor. They're like, listen, you keep giving your reasons why you're allowed to occupy this territory. We're not buying it anymore. They've forced them out, and so now Bajor is slowly trying to rebuild this planet as their own planet, and so they have this provisional government, which means it's a government set up by the Federation, which is, like, so relevant to, like, real-world politics,
yes.
you know, where the Americans just kind of, like, put in their own version of a government.
Sure,
so,
exactly.
So Major Kira is an envoy for the Bajorans. She's Bajoran. She's fiercely Bajoran. She's, like, previously a freedom fighter, a terrorist who had fought against the Cardassian occupation her whole
okay.
life. And now she's finally in this, forced into this, like, behind-the-desk role in government, and she's all like, ooh, why don't we just bomb them all? It's really great. And then there's the Federation soldiers who are there. There's the Federation commander, Sisko. Can I just go through the entire show?
I mean, I would prefer you not to list things, because lists are boring.
Okay.
But you can talk about the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I mean, this is your segment.
Yes.
But in my head, this segment is best when you are me as a clueless Trekker
yeah.
who has the tiniest little bit of Trek knowledge. And you are explaining something that makes no sense, and I am attempting to figure out the context.
Right, okay. There's also a Ferengi bar owner, so it's the first time there's been a Ferengi.
Okay. Now, Ferengis were bad guys at some point?
Yeah, Ferengis are they're not so much bad guys as much as they're just also there, and they're also villainous.
Okay.
They're
the forehead guys.
The forehead guys, yeah.
Yes.
They have the big ears.
Right, yeah.
I always really loved their design.
They were
it's so
in
simple
the episode...
and so iconic. I love the fact that their brows connect to their ears.
Yeah.
It works so well.
They are in the episode where Riker goes to the planet with,
yeah.
like...
And that was their introduction.
Yes.
The first time they'd ever met Ferengis.
I have seen
that
They're episode.
So great. Everyone hates Ferengis. They're like the Ewoks of the Star Trek universe.
Oh, no.
Because they were introduced in The Next Generation. So there's this... They're this new, shitty,
okay.
irritating presence. But
they're...
I love them because they're horrible.
Right.
And I love flawed, horrible characters.
Yes.
So Quark, I love Quark, but... They really botched his character. They, yeah. They did the thing where they made him, like, they did that same thing that Trek writers always do, where it's, like, the shitty underdog is the one we want. The one we care about is the one who's struggling. They made him, like, a respected Ferengi who's good at Ferenginess.
So this is the guy who works at
the bar. He owns the bar. Okay. Yeah. I really like Quark, but they could have made him a lot better. Anyways, so Deep Space Nine, I was watching it, and I was enjoying it. But I was thinking, I was like, so far, I've only seen about 10 or so episodes. Mm-hmm. So far, its reputation as the best Trek, very well deserved. Because all of the Treks have taken at least a full season, if not two, three, or four, in Voyager's case, to really hit their stride.
Yeah.
Deep Space Nine is already, like, okay, a good series.
Yes.
Straight off the bat. But then I was thinking, like, is it maybe too good?
Whoa.
I feel like they're never going to, no, I feel like no one's ever going to devolve into a caveman. The way they did on the Next Generation at one point.
You want that.
I also feel like no one's ever going to evolve into a salamander man the way they did on Voyager. I was like, they're not going to have, like, the dumbest episodes.
Right.
And as soon as I was thinking that, the next episode I got to...
Oh, no, yes.
Four characters got shrunk down into a board game that another character was playing without knowing that his... co-workers on the station were in the board game, and I was like, oh, fuck, okay.
Yeah.
I'm on board.
Yeah, we found
you got
it.
Me. You, somehow, they're just dumb enough, just good enough. It's mm-hmm. great. It's so great. And there's a character named Dr. Bashir, and so, as you know, I love Riker, mm-hmm. who's an arrogant horny.
Yes.
And I, but what you
an
didn't...
An A.H.
What you didn't know is that I also love... the EMH doctor on Voyager, who is a pretentious douchebag.
And he is the hologram,
he's a hologram,
right?
yes.
I do remember him from my parents watching it when I was
yes.
a child.
And he's very good.
Yes.
I love Tom Paris, because I'm a piece of shit, and I love shitty cute boys.
Is the hologram a shitty cute boy?
No, Tom Paris is.
Who's Tom Paris?
Tom Paris is another character on Voyager.
Okay.
He's my favorite character, but the hologram is the best character.
Okay. Because I was going to say, he's like an old, balding, he's not that old, but he's like a
man. Yeah, a balding man.
And he's so, like, not what I would describe as a cute boy.
Yeah, no. Okay, so, sorry, I confused you. I shouldn't have mentioned Tom Paris at all.
Yes.
He was just on my mind because I love him. And also because I was talking to our friend online, and they were talking about this episode, and they were like, I hate this guy, I wish he would die. And I was like, I know, isn't he the worst? I love him, he's my favorite. But he's the worst. He's
yeah,
fucking
exactly.
terrible character. Anyway, so I love Riker, who is an arrogant horny. I love the EMH doctor, who is pretentious douchebag. And now I start watching...
PD,
pretentious douchebag. And now I start watching Deep Space Nine. And they have a character named Dr. Bashir, who is... an arrogant, horny, pretentious douchebag.
Oh!
And he was made for me.
Yeah.
I love him so much. Oh my god. Just when I thought I couldn't love a Star Trek character more, Bashir appears in my life.
Exactly.
And he's so good. They had a moment where he's in a spaceship with Major Kira, and she's complimenting him. She's on whatever, we didn't see it, it was off screen. She's saying, like, that was amazing. I really thought that person was dead. And he was like, oh yeah. But I knew to look for this, this, and this, and then I did the thing, and she's like, yeah, no, it was really great. She's like, you know, sometimes, he has a British accent, you know, sometimes I even amaze myself sometimes. And he's, like, perfectly, unironically going on, who else would have ever thought to da-da-da, da-da-da.
That's so good.
It's like I was made to be a healer. And Major Kira's like, still, we can see her, he can't see her facial expression, but we can see that she's going, like, what the fuck you, douchebag?
Right. Yeah.
And she goes, oh, I'm so humbled to be in your presence, like, 100% ironically, and he doesn't pick up on it, and he's like,
no,
I'm very glad that you're here along on this journey with me, and it's like, oh my god, you're so terrible, I love you so much.
You've got a new son.
Cute. Oh, he's so beautiful.
Yeah.
He's like, I just want to cradle him in my arms and kiss his forehead.
Mm-hmm.
Julian Bashir.
I love
him. I can't wait to see what crazy things I learn about him.
Yeah. I can't wait for next time on My Trek Adventure.
That's right. Because I've spoiled some things for myself by reading random...
Sure.
I like to just go through Netflix's episode descriptions
okay.
and read what's coming up. I know, it's the weirdest, dumbest habit. So I've spoiled a few things for myself. Like, I know Worf is going to appear as a main cast member. And he's also going to date another character.
I knew that just from culture. The main character. That Worf ends up being on
DS9. And he also ends up dating Dax. Which is fascinating because right now Bashir very much wants to date Dax.
Ooh.
And he loves women. He's so horny. And he's always hitting on women.
Good.
And he was hitting on this other woman that Q didn't want him to be hitting on. And so Q disappears. And he's like, hey, I think you're pretty tired. You look pretty tired. And Bashir's like, oh, man, you're right. I'm really tired. And then Bashir just, like, wanders off. And he's gone. Because Q is omnipotent dog. He just makes him sleep for the rest of the episode. And it's, like, the weirdest thing. I was like, where's Bashir? Where's Bashir? And then at the end of the episode, Bashir appears again. And he's like, oh, I feel like I've been asleep for days. I was like, oh, my God. This show, it's so dumb and it's so great. Oh my God. Okay, I gotta take a breath.
Okay.
It's so good.
So when we last left our characters.
Oh yeah, right. Okay.
They are
so speaking of arrogant horny.
Yes.
They enter the
Akira
castle.
And Andy enter into
Little Andy.
Lil Andy.
Is it Lil Andy?
I believe it's Little. Little. I believe Little it's Andy. Little. Little Andy enters
the littlest
into the
castle. Andy.
Yes. And we have Nigel giving...
Nigel Thornberry
giving commentary.
Yes. Here they go. I forget what his voice is like.
It's...
Yes, Martin. Tim Curry. Here we go. This is into the castle.
Oh, darling. Yes.
What? Cheerio, in it.
tea and crumpets. They...
Okay, so what I'm thinking is they enter the castle, and what I know about Dracula is that he seduces the mind.
Mm.
And when Jonathan Harkin is living in his castle, he keeps giving him weird, sexy visions.
Mm.
Maybe they're real? Of, like, sexy vixen vampiresses?
Well, what I will say about Akira is he very horny.
Mm-hmm.
He has a, like, when he transforms into the devil,
right.
He becomes, like, his sex drive is increased hundredfold.
Right.
And he even jerks off at school.
And he puts the porn on the big...
On the projector.
The big screen in the gym.
Exactly.
Because I was going to talk about how horny the count is. But you...
For numbers?
You were for real talking about the actual character of Akira and how horny he is. So what I'm picturing is the Count.
Mm-hmm.
But he does have... He just has a puppet head.
Okay.
But his body
is Bela Lugosi.
No.
Oh.
Very sexy, sculpted abs. Oh. And his shirt... like, think Interview with the Vampire.
Mm-hmm.
So his shirt is always very open. Showing his chest.
Yes.
And so when
he's got
a
boob window.
Yes. So they arrive at the castle, and he is on a chaise lounge, those fancy sideways couch things.
And he says, one, two,
two
guests in my castle.
Yes. And
welcome.
And he has beautiful women just, like, sprawled around him.
Yes.
And then they walk up to Akira. They're like, welcome to the castle.
And all the women have, thing one, thing two. They're all, like, numbered.
Oh, yes! They all have numbers on their chest.
Yes.
Very good. And so they welcome Akira to the castle. And then a very sexy little poodle.
Ooh.
And welcomes little Andy to the castle.
So this is what happens is, Akira is, like his mouth is agape.
Mm-hmm.
He's drooling. And Andy's
little
like...
Little tiny nosebleeds.
And little Andy is like, come on, Akira. Don't get distracted. Don't get...
And a poodle walks in from the shadows.
Mm-hmm. And this poor...
But Akira can hear them.
Yeah.
And poodle's like... Welcome to the castle, little Andy. How did you know my name? I know all about you. Andrew.
And
little Andrew.
And they circle each other and sniff each other's butts.
Oh my god, yes.
And Akira is surrounded by 1, 2, 3, 4.
4 beautiful ladies.
And the count is just...
he's just loving it. He's just writhing.
He's writhing in the sexualness of this room.
And then Akira turns back to where the couch had where the count had previously been laying, and suddenly the chaise lounge. Am I saying that right?
Yeah.
The couch is empty. He's like, what? And then suddenly from behind him, a hand comes on his shoulder, and the count is magically standing behind him.
Ooh.
Whispers in his ears.
I've been expecting one.
One. Beautiful guest.
Beautiful guest.
And then, suddenly Akira wakes up, and he's laying in bed. Was it all a dream? He's in a bed in the castle, okay. Is what I mean.
Yes.
Because that happens all the time in the Dracula novel.
Right.
Jonathan suddenly wakes up. Where's all the vampire ladies?
Right.
Was it a dream?
Was it a dream?
Probably wasn't a dream.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so, now Akira... Oh, he still needs to search for the Dragon Balls.
Mm-hmm. So,
now he's alone in bed. Doesn't know where little Andy is.
Right.
Doesn't know where the count has gone.
He is alone, and he goes back to the mission.
Yes.
We hear Nigel.
Finds his radar and his scanner.
Yeah. Oh, how does Nigel talk?
Cheese pizza.
Oh, we've rediscovered Akira. He's waking up and he has decided to continue his mission.
Okay.
So, Akira.
Now what?
Well, Akira has a heightened sense of smell.
Oh, does he?
Like, he's just
heightened
kind of
senses.
Well, heightened senses. Akira just has whatever superpower they need him to have.
Right.
So, he's like, I mean, I guess he already has the radar and the scouter. He doesn't need that, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Like, he's hunting for the Dragon Ball.
Right.
So he's opening doors, and maybe he's discovering traps.
Mm-hmm.
So he enters into a library.
Mm.
And he's...
Like, the radar has led him to a library.
Yes. And he's slinking through the library.
Mm-hmm.
And it's boop, boop.
Oh, and then it boop, 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 towards a certain book on the shelf.
Yes.
Which is Interview with the Vampire.
Interview with the Vampire.
By Anne Rice.
Yes.
And so he grabs it and tries to pull it off the shelf. But then it just kind of like, chink, falls like a lever.
Oh.
And the bookshelf turns and takes him with him.
Oh, no.
And he falls down the slide. Whoa, sliding down the slide. And he falls into a labyrinth.
A labyrinth,
under
okay.
the castle.
Yes.
Now, what I want to happen is for Sandy to be there. Back from the dead.
Interesting.
But...
perhaps a ghost?
Yeah. Like, the Count has brought Sandy back. He's like, I know what you desire. I know what you need. And he brings her back. But
is Akira part of... I mean, Akira Noble...
Yes.
...is doing this for his friend, Little Andy. But perhaps he himself is in love with Sandy.
Oh, that's right. We'll age her up a bit.
Yeah. Yes. And... maybe it's not love as much as it's like fatherness. If we want to keep her the same age,
I guess
a certain love.
I guess it wasn't said what age she is in the Dolly Parton song.
Yeah.
Maybe it was a very sexy 19-year-old, just like with her pet dog, wearing a little shawl, little natural style, and being like, oh, it's so cold.
I want some gingerbread. Gingerbread crumbs on my giant boobies.
Oh, no.
Is that that Family Guy character? The
I don't know.
So, yeah, like, little Sandy.
Yes.
Let's have Akira have, like, a certain relationship with her. Like, the idea that, like, he would recognize a false Sandy because of his love for Sandy. And it is a, it is not a sexual or even a romantic. It is a love,
a familial love.
A familial love.
Yes. So she'll still be like 8?
Yeah.
Like in the song?
Mm-hmm.
7? I don't know. A little girl. So maybe he sees, he falls down the slide and he lands in a very fancy living room. Mm-hmm. There's a hearth, a fire going.
He lands in a seat.
Oh yes, he falls down the slide and lands into an armchair.
Yes.
And laying on the rug is little Andy, very comfortably warming himself by the fire, laying at the feet of, and he, and the chair is turned towards the fireplace. So we can't see the person that little Andy is in front of. We can see that their little tiny feet sticking out. Hi there, Akira. We've been waiting for you.
So wait, it's
this is a voice coming from
the armchair. This is Sandy or Andy?
This is Sandy.
Okay, Sandy. Sorry.
Oh wait, I forgot that Akira can understand Andy's voice.
Yes.
I'm getting them confused so often.
So fair.
Okay.
But yes, it is Sandy.
Sandy.
So her little cute feet are sticking out.
We've been expecting you. I guess I'm British now. I don't think they was British.
I mean, Dolly Parton Southern. Would have been, so, yeah.
I am from the South.
Yeah.
Mostly I'm just a cute, just a cute little girl.
Sandy?
I just love gingerbread.
Is that you? Sandy loves gingerbread.
And I don't know anything else about, I keep going British!
Candy. Candy. And gingerbread are, like, all she talks about.
Oh, you couldn't eat candy, Akira.
Sandy. Sandy loves candy. Who Sandy. Are you?
Well, I'm Sandy. And then she spins around in her chair. And it's, sure enough, Sandy.
Sandy?
Hi, Akira.
It's been...
Thanks for helping me get my doggy back.
Where is Andy?
Well, Andy, little Andy's right here, right at my feet. And she picks up the dog, and then he sees that the dog is kind of decomposing a little bit. His eyeballs hanging out of his head. And she pets him. This is my very best friend, little Andy, doggy.
Who are you? What have you done with Andy?
Don't you recognize me, Akira? It's Sandy. Don't you want to play with me forever and Devil.
You look like Sandy, but you're not my Sandy.
Have we met each other before? Probably.
Probably.
I forget who I am.
For Black Obediences, yes. We've met before.
because it was his door that she had knocked on to get the gingerbread, and then she died. And he was like, oh no, I got this little doggy.
Yeah. I guess we'll go on a hunt for the Dragon Balls.
Mm-hmm. And then... the Count is in another armchair, and it swivels.
It swivels.
And he says,
ah,
hello.
I don't know where to go with this.
Okay, so we have...
Oh, like, maybe Sandy picks up the dog and then just runs down a corridor, and now he has to follow.
Okay.
Because he knows that is little Andy.
Okay, so
maybe little Andy is just, like, enraptured. With the idea that his best friend is back.
He, little Andy, is so enraptured, smitten, whatever it is. He's just overwhelmed, and he can't see the difference.
Yeah.
So
she puts her down. She puts her little doggy down, and she runs. She goes, very scary children's giggle.
Yeah. And the Count is sitting at the table, and is like, one...
adorable little girl.
And one adorable little dog. What are you going to do, my friend? And Akira's like, curse you, Count!
I'll get you yet!
And he does the famous Devilman Crybaby run.
Oh, yes,
down the hallway.
And runs towards the Count, but the Count has disappeared by then. And so he turns back to where little Sandy was, and Sandy goes... and then runs down the hallway, and you can hear the little pitter-patter of her bare feet running down the hallway, and little Andy runs after her. Come back! And runs after her. little patter, pitter patter of doggy feet.
Yes.
That's what dogs sound like.
That's exactly what dogs sound like. And so
he's like, "No, you fool!"
Devilman follows them and appears, like, enters into a room where there is many Sandys and many Andys.
Ooh.
And he's looking around. What is this? What is this curse?
Isn't this what you wanted? 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 And it's echoing all throughout the cavern.
Devilman closes his eyes. And we see Eliza, giant
yes,
Eliza,
that's right.
In her cage. And Akira's there. And he's like, "Eliza, lend me some strength."
Mm-hmm.
And Eliza's like,
I can just talk to animals, man. Do I have other powers? I don't know.
Okay, here's some strength.
Oh, wait, I got some extra strength laying around. Here, have some.
And Devilman opens his eyes. And he jumps.
He can see the truth.
And he grabs Sandy.
By the neck?
By the neck. And it's the real Sandy. Real Sandy.
Mm-hmm.
The Sandy breaks down and it's the count.
Ooh. Yes.
One failed attempt.
And he just melts into gross, slippery organs.
Yeah.
Into a pool on the floor.
Leaving behind the last Dragon Ball.
That's right. It was inside him all along. You have passed the test.
And Andy wakes up. What's happened? And Akira...
What happened?
Akira picks up little Andy and... It's okay.
It's all right now, my friend.
We are... We're safe. And Nigel comes over the
uh-huh.
commentary.
Yeah.
And says... Together...
Shall we check in with our... our latest contestant,
yes.
Akira and little Andy.
So, they have discovered the last Dragon Balls.
Was it the very last one?
Yes.
It was the seventh one?
It was the seventh one.
Nice.
So, will they... This is not at all Nigel. Will they... now wish their friend back? And so they gather the Dragon Balls and they summon Shenron.
Still in the castle?
I guess they go outside.
Maybe they're on
the
top of the castle.
Yes.
Yeah. On
like
top
that.
Of a tall tower.
Yeah.
And it's storming
yes.
and lightning bolts.
And Shenron appears before them.
Maybe the Count is also watching. He reappears in the air, sitting delicately in the air.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Aren't you a fascinating specimen? And now he's in love with Akira.
Ooh.
Just likes a challenge.
I do like this.
And he's just watching from the distance. He's like, "Hey! You're back!" And he's like, "Yes, it was all a trap, a trick."
A trick. It's that Dragon Ball thing where, like, the bad guy becomes their best friend later.
Yeah, it's the Vegeta rules.
It's Vegeta rules. So, Shenron appears,
mm-hmm.
and, does Shenron have, like, a thing he says just, like, wish? You want a wish? Hey, buddy.
Hey! What's going on? You want a wish or what? I got stuff to do. Come on. Keep it moving.
I'm a busy dragon. Wish dragon.
That's right.
And, you know, so I imagine Akira and Andy wish for Sandy back.
Yeah.
And
so Sandy, this whole time, has been training with King Kai on his tiny little planet. And she has a little halo. And then she appears... And she has learned the Tenkai... No, wait. What was it called? You know.
Yeah.
The Kamehameha.
Yeah.
The second...
She can go Super Sandy now.
Super Sandy! Oh my god! I love it!
She can go Super Sandy.
Hey, Andy! Look what I can do! And then she just gets like the chi build up around her and her hair goes... Ba-ding!
And like she's able to summon gingerbread and candy.
Oh my god, yes.
Yeah. And that's how our story ends, I think.
It's a happy ending, yeah.
It's a happy ending, yeah.
Were there any other contestants on the TV show?
Probably, but like...
they're off doing something.
Yeah. Like, Nigel just gives, like, a...
They weren't strong enough to resist the Count's...
Right.
So we cut to some of the other contestants that are maybe William Riker.
Okay.
And Akira's buddy, the blonde-haired guy.
Rio.
And they're just, like, having the time of their life.
They're just in a basement on the floor
with some sexy vampire ladies.
And they're just like, one, two,
but I don't even care. Oh, I love it.
Three, four.
Beautiful women.
Beautiful women. Number of the day. Oh.
This orgy brought to you by the number 13. Maybe what? Asterix and Obelix are there.
Okay.
And they're going, God, because they always had French thing. Oh, I guess that this is, I'm betraying the fact that I watched the Canadian Sesame Street, where we always learn French numbers as
Interesting.
Well. Sesame Park.
Right. Yeah, I remember that.
I learned French numbers from Sesame Street, and that's the only reason I know any of them.
Right.
And so I only know up to 10.
Yeah. Well, and that's how we end.
It's so, happy ending after all.
Happy ending after all.
Okay, so here's what I want to happen. Super Sandy. Teaches Akira and little Andy to go Super Saiyan on the roof of the Count's castle.
Yes.
And they all go, and get their frenzy hair. Mm-hmm. And then they blast off into the distance.
So, remember that Devilman has Eliza Thornberry's...
Oh, that's right!
Pigtails.
And so they become golden, very spiky, very sharp looking.
Yes.
Ding! Maybe there's like multiple pigtails out of his head now. Like eight, perhaps.
Yes.
And so they blast off into the distance with the Count watching. And he's like, you haven't seen the last of me, Akira Fudo. And that's our ending shot.
Okay. So all of our heroes go Super Saiyan and blast off, and the Count gives a...
Looks like we're blasting off again!
Yes. Sandwich criticism? You know what? Before we end...
Yes?
I'm going to do a How Stinky.
Oh, okay!
We are going to do Disney princesses.
Oh, very good.
Princess Cinderella.
Huh?
How stinky.
So that's the first one that did come to mind, because she would be the stinkiest.
She would be the stinkiest.
Well, her name is literally named after the fact that she's covered in cinders, covered in dirt all the time.
Oh, that's true.
And she's all sweaty from working constantly, and she's not given the fancy potpourris and various spices and... whatever else old-timey deodorants they used in medieval times that her stepsisters and stepmother would have. Mm-hmm. So she'd stink like B.O. all the time. She's not brushing her teeth. It's old-timey days. I mean, if we're going by that rules, all of them would stink like hell. Because old-timey days, everyone stank all the time.
Tiana, because she's like from the 20s.
It's
so
true, yeah.
She would be brushing her teeth.
Yeah.
But that's about it.
Mm-hmm. But Cinderella specifically stinks like cinders, stinks like... mouse droppings.
Yeah. Princess Ariel.
Huh? How stinky. Dead fish. Stinks like fish.
Constantly. I mean,
and not in a euphemistic way.
No.
Actually smells like fish. Because of all the fish that she's eaten and rubbing up against. And also is.
Mm-hmm.
Part of her is a fish. So fish Ariel just smells like fish. But then fish human Ariel also just smells like fish.
I mean, they're by the
still by the ocean.
Yeah, by the ocean.
She just came out of the ocean after living there her whole life.
Princess Mulan.
How stinky.
She's a warrior. Wearing that heavy armor all the time.
Mm-hmm. So we got the B.O.
Yeah.
And then...
probably to disguise herself, she has to smell like a man a little bit. Although she bathes. She's the only princess canonically to bathe.
Yeah, and she does specifically say, just because I look like a man doesn't mean I need to smell like one.
Exactly.
So maybe,
she's the best-smelling princess.
Stinky. Yeah.
Princess Mulan, the best-smelling princess.
The only bathing one.
Yeah.
One thing.
And we'll end with the original princess.
Oh, that's right.
Snow White. How stinky.
Smells delicious. She was like fresh baked apple pies.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah.
And part of her whole deal is just that like she's so pleasant. She's
right.
The fairest in the land. I feel like naturally, like her B.O. scent is like
a floral scent. Like, right. She kind of smells like roses naturally.
Yes. I don't even think she smells like roses. That's, like, too good. I want to say it's, like, what am I trying to say? She smells the least offensive. It's, like, she smells like IKEA.
Oh.
She smells like Costco.
A good scent.
She smells just, like...
Like
nothing at all.
But then she's also baking apple pies.
Yeah, that's
she's
true.
She's just so friendly. She kind of smells like poopery a little bit. And I think she just kind of smells like a really pleasant housewife.
Yeah.
Like a mom.
Like a mom.
You know? Like a really... You know when you go to your rich friends' houses they just... The house just kind of smells like cleaning products and perfume.
It's like...
But like in
like
a nice, Windex subtle way. Yeah, like Windex and... Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
it's the scent of Snow White.
And now we will end with sandwich criticism.
Oh, okay.
One thing you like from our fan fiction this week.
Let's see. I liked that we...
I liked how we shifted. I liked that we had set something up, and then we were like, no, it's a game show. And then we were no... These characters are on a team, and then we decided one of them was actually the antagonist. I liked our ability to shift.
Yes.
What
we kept it loose, free-floating. Yeah, yeah.
One thing you didn't like.
How difficult it is to make a Nigel Thornberry voice.
Yeah.
It seems like it would be so easy.
It's such a voice, but it's just
almost too
difficult.
Iconic. Yeah. Because everyone can hear it in your head.
Mm-hmm.
I really thought it would be easier. It's not.
And the last thing we liked?
That we did throw some Super Saiyans in there.
Yeah. I like the...
Most stories are improved by Super Saiyans.
I like that it ended with everyone powering up and shooting off into the...
And the phrase Super Sandy.
Super Sandy was
very
good.
Happy. Very excited.
If you'd like to suggest characters for us, submit them to ffwrshow@gmail.com.
And thanks to the band known as Seawater Bliss for the use of their song Theme from Teen Wolf 2 as our intro and outro.
And remember... When in doubt, just AU that garbage.